Zamparelli on 2FM with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
My next guest, okay, has tried everything in life. I mean, everything. Judo, being a DJ, corporate life in Hong Kong. But recovering from grief brought him to his calling, let's say. And that is helping people to heal themselves by breathing. Yes, it sounds so simple, but it's trickier than you think. Stuart Sanaman is on the line now. Good morning, Stuart. How are you?
Morning. I'm very well. I'm a little bit out of breath. I've been moving boxes this morning.
Oh, you're moving?
Do you know what? My parents have actually sold their family home of 40-odd years, and I've realised I've had my stuff stored in there for about 10 or 15 years, so I've been moving stuff out that I didn't need anymore.
You're a good son, helping them move boxes. That must be an emotional time, you know, your parents selling the family home. Are you okay, Stuart?
I'm all right. You know, they've been toying with doing it for the last couple of years.
Okay.
So it wasn't a complete surprise, but it is emotional because it's my family home that we grew up in. So.
And you're like, sorry, I can't pick up that bag. I just need to take a call with a radio station in Dublin just for a few minutes. And I won't keep you too long because you're a busy man. But Stuart, can you explain, first of all, for listeners, just a bit about what happened in your life between Valentine's and Mother's Day 2016?
Yeah, so my girlfriend passed away on Valentine's Day after a sort of 18-month battle with terminal cancer. So not the best of... It's a bad thing anyway, but to happen on Valentine's Day as well was an extra kind of...
I'm very sorry to hear that.
Low. Yeah, so that it was obviously a very challenging 18 months of looking at different conventional treatments for cancer, all the wonderful alternatives that are out there as well. And sadly, none of that really worked. And she passed away, and I moved back to Scotland, where I'm from, and all that happened a month later. It was that year, the way it landed, it was probably about 6 or 7 weeks later, was I took my mum for Mother's Day to a breathing class, and it was the most powerful thing I've ever done. And it sounds so bizarre and weird, something so simple as breathing had the ability to shift or transform how I was feeling in such a dramatic, quite cathartic way. So that's how I kind of got into breathing as a kind of tool. It wasn't something I went looking for. It was something that kind of landed on my lap after a very challenging time and working through grief. And it was like my secret fight club. I'd go along to these sessions it would just be a wonderful way for me to find solace and let go of some of the physical tension I was holding on to and obviously all the emotional tension that had built up. So much so that I thought, wow, why is no one being taught to breathe? Why was I never taught to breathe in different shapes and forms? So I set off on a mission to find out as much as I possibly could about breathing. And I know you shared just before I came on, it's more complex than we think. Mm-hmm. We think we're just breathing and that's fine and we're alive and what else could it do? But our breath is really a measure of how we're living. It's a link to how we're feeling. It's also linked to how our past, our experiences, our patterns, our beliefs, our traumas. And it's also linked to our energy levels day to day, and we can use it to shift the way we think and feel and move forward in life with a bit more energy, a bit more flow, a bit more ability to kind of go for what we truly desire.
Okay. So, Stuart, what changed us from breathing gurus as babies to being weighed down by a bag of bricks as adults?
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, kids are the breathing gurus. And then life happens. Now, life happens in a number of ways. It might be bad habits that we pick up from our parents, from our school, from our peers. In terms of breathing, like mechanics, we might learn to breathe ineffectively as we grow up. Or we hold our breath. We hold our breath to stop ourselves from feeling. Now, that can be a conscious example would be trying to hold back laughter when you're trying to laugh, or when you feel like you're going to laugh at something or someone, or holding back anger, or holding back those tears when you don't feel appropriate to cry. The way we hold back from feeling is by holding our breath. So that's a very conscious example, but unconsciously, our mind does that to protect ourselves from feeling as well. If it thinks, oh, that's going to hurt, let's not go there. So our breathing becomes, our breathing maps our human experience, first of all. So when we're feeling good, our breath is expansive and open. When we're feeling stressed, things start to contract and get a bit tight. If we're holding back anger, we even hold on even more. If we're holding back from tears. So it's really is this, like I said before, a measure of how we're feeling and living in the moment. But if we have experiences through our life, that might be the habitual stress day in, day out. We have a stressful breathing pattern when we feel stressed. And if that goes on for days, months, years, then our breathing pattern will become a stressful breathing pattern. We become kind of held hostage to our breathing pattern that's sending a signal of stress to our brain. Or we go through experiences like I did, grief, change, worry, some sort of traumatic event. And I say traumatic event, it can be kind of big T, the kind of PTSD from something very challenging. Or I often call them the little T's. The experiences that maybe happen when we're younger that we don't really think of as traumatic, maybe being blamed for something instead of somebody else. So we can see that our breath pattern is linked to all these different experiences. And because we have our experiences from when we're born, as we grow older, we find that our breathing becomes very unconventional and we're actually holding on to a lot of bricks and boulders. But just by holding on to our breath.
Now, some of the reviewers of your book, Stuart, Breathe In, Breathe Out, your book, did breathing sessions with you and ended up crying their eyes out. What did you do to them, Stuart?
I didn't do anything. I just guided the practice. And it's our breathing that does that. Because if we've held on to an experience, let's use myself as an example. My breathing had actually closed. I was breathing fine in my diaphragm and all the kind of the usual parts that you think were good breathing, nose, diaphragm, etc., which we should be using. But my secondary muscles weren't being used because I didn't want myself to feel. I didn't want to feel grief. Big boys don't cry was the bigger kind of belief pattern for me. So I held on and I didn't breathe into that space. Now my mind, which has an idea of time, said that's fine, I'm dealing with it, that's past. But my body was holding on as if it was still happening, because our body didn't know the difference of time. So for me, when I start to breathe into that space, open up into the muscles that are contracted to stop myself from feeling grief, because that boy did not want to cry as an adult even, then when I actually opened up and allowed myself to breathe into that space, it's like releasing the trapped emotion that I've been holding on to since that experience. And that experience was because of the past and my way of dealing with certain experiences. Hopefully that makes sense, not too abstract. So when people have done sessions with me, it's very much similar. People will breathe into areas that they have basically held on and closed down. So when we often say we kind of pinpoint the tears, but sometimes people are in bits of laughter through my sessions because they haven't allowed themselves to feel pure joy. They've gone through their life. Maybe their formative years, they were told to shush and not laugh or don't laugh at this, or they've held back from actually feeling joy. So it can go anywhere in the emotional spectrum. It can be tears. It can be tears of joy. It can be tears of laughter. It can be a lot of catharsis, a lot of release. But it's basically like you shared earlier, the bag of bricks, whatever's in that bag, whatever we've been holding on to, whatever experiences we've had that we've not allowed ourselves to fully feel through them, our emotions get trapped. And the way we trap them is held in our breathing cycle. So it's really, I find it so fascinating, because it wasn't something, like I said, I went out to seek for, but it was something that helped me so much that I went off and I started researching. And obviously I've written the book as well, which covers a lot of this stuff. And I met a research partner and we've been working on a body of work to figure out, well, this is amazing. We can release trauma and we can release our emotions that we're holding on to, that bag of bricks, quite profoundly by doing a certain way of breathing.
So why is the... Okay, let's get into it then. Why, for example, is the nose so important in getting our breathing right?
Yeah, so the stuff I've just been talking about there is slightly different practice in terms of releasing emotion through breath. It's more like an intervention, like you go and have a therapy session or something, but we use breathing as the tool, which I cover in the book. But then when we flip to kind of day-to-day breathing, there is some apparatus which is slightly different, like our optimal breathing day-to-day. We want to be using our nose, which is it's designed for breathing, basically. Yeah. It filters the air, gets the correct moisture and temperature to our lungs. The size of our nostrils slows the rate at which we breathe, so we feel calm. And we also getting out there's also something called nitric oxide that's released into the air when we breathe through our nose. That's released from the nasal cavity, which opens up our blood vessels and kills off any airborne bacteria and viruses. So it's a really key to be using our nose to breathe as much as possible day to day. There's times that we will jump into our mouth breath. Maybe if we get a fright, we'll take a big gasp of air and that triggers the stress response. But if we're breathing through our mouth throughout the day, then we're just sending an alarm bell of stress the whole time. It messes up the biochemistry of our body because we end up over-breathing, which is a little bit like maybe overeating or something like that. We're throwing the system off balance if we're over-breathing through the mouth. So we want to be using our nose to breathe, and we want to be using our diaphragm, which is the primary breathing muscle, which descends downwards when we breathe in, and it gets this kind of nice, open, flowing breath. Belly expands first, and it massages all our inner organs and gets everything moving. It works a bit like a pump for our lymphatic system as well. So they're the kind of two key players in breathing properly day to day. But it's then looking a little bit deeper to understand, well, where else am I? Where from those primary points, where is the breath then expanding into, or where is it not expanding into? And that can start painting a picture about how we're interacting with our world, how stressed we are, how much energy we have, and can be the key to holding our trauma.
Wow.
Or solving our trauma.
It's funny, you're talking about the belly being so important when you're breathing and letting it expand. When you're looking at Instagram and a lot of, I would say, fitness people are telling us to suck in that belly and hold it in so you have a nice flat tummy. But that is not optimal for your well-being if we're talking about in terms of breathing, right?
It's funny because, we all get held hostage to the maybe fashion trends of high-waisted jeans or holding our stomach in to have the appearance of a trim waistline. And when we're holding our stomach in, we switch to chest breathing, which actually makes us more stressed, which means we can't digest our food as well, which actually messes up the movement of our digestion as well. So although it maybe doesn't look so good for that Instagram post, the belly going out as we breathe in, it's certainly better for our digestion, our health, our stress levels. And you could say because of that, it would actually help with weight loss too.
Wow. Can we talk about some tips for sleep?
Yes.
Because you have a few of those as well. Go on.
Yeah. Well, breathing is really about our stress response. It's an automatic function to get air into your body to keep you alive. But the speed at which we breathe is triggered depending on what's happening around us or what's happening in our mind. Because it's triggering the stress response to get you out of danger. It's something we've had since our ancestors thousands of years ago. We're running from tigers and bears. So when it comes to sleep, if we are stressed, if we're anxious, if we're thinking or overthinking, or we're thinking about what we've done that day or not done that day, or we've got to do tomorrow, or what we've forgotten to do, we're basically sending that alarm bell of stress to our body and mind. And if we're sending the signal of stress to body and mind, the breathing and the body responds as if the tiger's in the room. So if there's a tiger in the room, we're not going to go to sleep in the basis of it. So what I teach people to do is a number of different things. There's pre-sleep exercises. So how do we turn the stress to calm? How do we flick the off switch, really, really calm the nervous system, move into our parasympathetic state, our rest, digest, repair mode, which is the mode that will allow us to fall into sleep, and our brain waves change as well, so that we actually go into a sleep mode. So there's certain breathing exercises that I share in the book Breathe In, Breathe Out that really help in those moments, like a pre-sleep exercise to help you wind down and fall asleep. There's also, while we're breathing, a lot of people, because we're asleep, we don't really realize, but a lot of people breathe through their mouth when they sleep, or a lot of people breathe dysfunctionally when they sleep. So it's really about making sure that we are breathing correctly during sleep. And this one's a bit, it doesn't sound as conventional, and it usually raises eyebrows when I tell people this is the approach. To make sure people are breathing through their nose when they sleep, I tell them to put a little bit of tape over their mouth when they go to bed. Now, I know that sounds quite... it could be. I wasn't thinking kinky, but it could be kinky if you're into that.
If I want my husband to breathe through his nose, I normally just kick him because he's an awful snorer.
Well, that will be it. If you're snoring and breathing through your mouth, yeah, and he won't reach a deep sleep because the mouth breath keeps it triggers our stress response. We get a buildup of bacteria in our mouth. Our saliva glands aren't working throughout the night, and we're just inhaling kind of stale air and bringing in that bacteria into our body. And the likelihood is you're more likely to have, if you're snoring, have sleep apnea.
Yeah.
Whereas we have these moments in our night where we stop breathing, and it's usually because of our tongue falling back into our mouth and preventing and blocking the airway, and we wake up with a bit of a fright and then fall back to sleep and start snoring again. So that the quickest way to resolve that is a bit of tape over the mouth. Now, there is some safety warnings before putting tape over your mouth when you go to bed. I do recommend practicing throughout the day just to make sure that you don't have a blocked nose, nasal cavity. There is some things that maybe prevent people to use their nose, like a deviated septum. Sometimes contact sports players get a nose bash and they can't breathe through the nose. Or sometimes people do have some sort of defects that affect the way the nose works, which requires an ENT doctor. But we can figure that out quite quickly just by taping our mouth up throughout the day, maybe starting off with a couple of minutes and building up to 20 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to try that with my husband now and see.
Yeah,
I can't wait to go home and tell him I'm going to tape his mouth up when we go to bed.
Tape his mouth up for 20 minutes in the day. Check he's okay with that. And then
see how that goes. Build it up.
Then you can do nighttime taping.
Okay.
And usually for the first week, just with that, don't use duct tape. Don't use Sellotape. You get micropore medical tape. It's from most pharmacies. It costs a couple of quid. It's just like thin, kind of quite porous tape. And it's not that sticky. It's a bit like masking tape.
Yeah.
So when you pop one strip on, it's more a deterrent at first. So the likelihood is for the first week, you'll wake up with the tape off. But over the course of a week or 2 weeks or even 3 weeks to a month, you'll find that you'll start waking up with the tape on. And once you can do like a full week with tape, waking up with the tape on, you've kind of graduated from that. So you can stop using the tape at night and see how you get on. But it's a very effective way and really, really effective, because what happens is you find that your breathing improves throughout the day because you've started to really hone in on nose breathing throughout the night for those 6 to 8 hours, however long you're sleeping. And you'll find that you will actually sleep a lot better. So you'll feel a bit more energized throughout the day, and your breathing should start to balance out. Maybe will reduce the anxiety and stress that you feel throughout the day as well.
Speaking of anxiety, what do you mean when you say that some of us are addicted to stress?
Yeah, this is something that I found quite fascinating when I was researching for my book, because I figured out I was addicted to stress. Now, there's a number of ways we can get addicted to stress, and we can get addicted to any emotion, much like being addicted to any substance, which doesn't sound something that we'd think about much. But when we think a certain thought, let's say we're stressed, we send a signal to the body and we release certain chemicals. And the body has a reaction to that, and we go about our day in that moment of that experience throughout our body, or that chemical signal throughout the body. Now, the body is always doing its best to find balance, what we call homeostasis. Now, balance is basically, I like to think of it as the brain just scanning the body and saying, right, where are we? What's our pH? What's going on here? What's the chemicals? What's happening? Okay, that's just balanced. And it's got certain things that it tees off. So pH is quite an important one. So it does a lot of things to make sure the pH is in its range, including speeding our breath up and slowing our breath down. But when it comes to sort of the chemical addiction of our emotions, when we think a stressful thought, the body has this rush of chemicals in the body. And if that happens persistently over and over and over again, the body starts to say, right, well, this is now the new normal. Now, this feels right that this is the new normal. So then it just says, right, okay, homeostasis is stress state. So it balances out this new state. So we almost like reconfigure ourselves. And this can be the same for other things, emotions that we wish we maybe our brain doesn't want to really feel, like guilt or shame or feeling upset. We can actually get addicted to some of these emotions. And what's fascinating is when we don't start to feel that emotion, we're going about our day, the body responds because it's addicted to that chemical that we receive when we think those thoughts, that it will send a signal to the brain to almost create, or will not quite seek out, but will end up finding a way to feel that emotion in the day. And that's what emotional addiction is. And it's very complex. You can probably even by me sharing what it is, it's you can see how scary it can be when we're stuck in these patterns. But the way that we can get out of them, again, is back down to breathing, because breathing is one of the quickest ways we can change the chemistry of our body.
Yeah, and we have the power within us to do it ourselves, cost effectively, because it doesn't cost you anything to breathe properly, and really easily, and a practice that we should all really, you know, focus on if we're doing it wrong. I presume a lot of us are doing it wrong. I just got a text in. I'm going to read out, Stuart. It says, I totally agree with using breathing as a technique. It is so powerful. I used it when I was going through operations for my breast cancer, or when I get anxious. I was taught these by my yoga lady. So she was so invaluable. That's from Jane and Roscommon. Yeah, it's a really interesting thing, because it just sounds so simple. I mean, something that we do every day, day in, day out, and something that we came into this world being experts at and being amazing at. I mean, you look at a baby and they know what they're doing. And life just chips away at us. And we get into this state of stress where we aren't breathing properly, something that we should be experts at and amazing at. But it's good to hear that we can rectify it by honing in on it and focusing on it. Is it something that can happen quite quickly? I want to know. Like, can I do it in the ad break? Can I fix my breathing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of the more stubborn patterns, if we've maybe held on to an experience from our childhood and we've been breathing like any habitual pattern, if we've been breathing a certain way, the muscle memory or our diaphragm's frozen, for example, there's certain things that are a little bit harder to crack, which just takes more practice.
Yeah.
But we will notice a difference, even in an ad break, if we slow our breath down, breathe in through the nose for four, hold for four, breathe out through the mouth for eight, nice and relaxed, nice and slow. You'll trigger the parasympathetic nervous system. So we're hacking our system straight away. Even in one cycle of that technique, hits the off switch. So we can, if you start practicing certain techniques. Now, I have certain techniques I'll do in the morning that they'll be kind of like get me set up for the day. And then I have my toolkit of techniques that I just use throughout the day, maybe because life gets stressful sometimes. Even if you are somebody that tries to keep as calm as possible or teach people these stuff, life still gets stressful, and sometimes we need it in that moment to turn our stress to calm, or go the other way. If we're feeling quite exhausted and we've got a lot to do, well, we can use our breath and create eustress, which is positive stress, to motivate us, much like having a double espresso. So we can use our breath to energize us if we're needing to a little bit more get up and go before an event or before work or something like that. So we can start to use our breath, understanding it and understanding what's going on for us, to kind of change the way and take a bit more control of how we feel throughout the day.
I love it. Well, listen, we're going to try that. I have a 1 minute and 22 seconds ad break here. We're all here in the office anyway, going to try and breathe properly. Can I just say before we go, Stuart, it's been so enlightening chatting to you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
And just to let people know, Stuart's book is out, Breathe In, Breathe Out, as simple as that. It's out now. And he is at Breathe Pod on Instagram if you want to give him a follow. Stuart, have a lovely day and best of luck with the packing up and helping out the parents, okay?
Yeah.
See
thank you
love.
So much.
Bye, 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 bye.
Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9
on 2FM.